The following is a paid commercial program from the Ulster County Department of Health. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly talk show exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is a community affairs presentation of the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health. Today, we're going to be talking about climate, health, and human activity. And our guest is Dr. Don Haas, who's a geoscientist and Director of Teacher Programming at the Paleontological Research Institution. Don's work in public outreach, teacher education, teacher professional development, and curriculum materials marries deep understandings of how people learn about the Earth and about the Earth system. He's past president of the National Association of Geoscience Teachers and a nationally regarded expert in climate and energy education. So, Don, welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio.
Thank you, Vince. It's good to be here.
So, Don, let's start with the basics. What exactly is geoscience and how does it better help us better understand and survive and thrive on the planet we all inhabit?
That's a great question. So geoscience is the science, the collective sciences of the Earth. So geology, atmospheric science, climatology, oceanography are all under the umbrella of geoscience. And you know, it is sometimes just called the Earth sciences. And you know, the students in New York high schools take Regents Earth Science, and that's basically a geoscience course. So that's the short version of what geoscience is and how it helps us thrive in the world. Was that part of what you asked there?
Yeah, survive and thrive.
Yeah, survive and thrive. So I think it's pretty important to understand how Earth systems work and how they change when processes change or when humans do too much of something, like burning fossil fuels, for example. Understanding how the Earth system works is, I think, very, very helpful for being an effective citizen and living a healthy life. I mean, we met at an event called Climate Health is Public Health, and I believe that very strongly. Understanding how the climate system works, which is, you know, one of the Earth systems, is pretty important for understanding health issues. And I will note that I'm a little hoarse today, and that I think is because of the smoke in the skies in Western New York today from the Canadian wildfires. I work in Ithaca, but I telecommute to Ithaca from Buffalo. Buffalo for the last 48 hours or so has been feeling the effects of those Canadian wildfires. And that's a health issue. It's a climate issue. And I think a very nice, in a pedagogical way, not nice in a health way, of demonstrating part of what we're talking about today.
Yeah. And the pollution is not just the result of burning wood, but it's other toxins mixed in with that, as I understand it. So Don, I did meet you at the Museum of the Earth for the wonderful climate event that the New York Public Health Association put on. I'm on the climate committee. A wonderful museum, and you have a really beautiful exhibit on the impacts of climate change. So tell me about the museum itself and your involvement in it.
Yeah. So the Museum of the Earth is one of the public venues of the Paleontological Research Institution, which is a mouthful. The Paleontological Research Institution, or PRI for short, was established in 1932 was established by a paleontologist at Cornell who was basically worried about his fossils not being taken care of after he retired. So he sort of said, I'm going to take my fossils and go home. And he started his own organization in a rift with Cornell University. And over time, that collection of fossils grew to one of the largest in North America. We have over 7 million fossil specimens in our collections. Maybe that 7 million also includes some recent seashells and stuff like that. Nobody knew about it until Museum of the Earth was established in 2003, So the museum opened 27 years ago to display some of those fossils and to help people better understand the Earth system. That's the short version. I will also note that we have been in a financial crisis for a little while. So if people find the stuff that I talk about today helpful, they can go and go to priweb.org and click on the donate button and help us out a little bit.
And I will assure our listeners that if you ever want to visit a great museum in a beautiful town, the beautiful town of Ithaca, it's well worth it. It was really, really enlightening and wonderful. And Don, one of the things that I was really impressed with was, you know, your teaching skill in terms of taking the concept of climate as we went through the tour of the museum and really breaking it down to really terms and concepts that almost anyone could appreciate and understand. So talk to us a little bit about, we know that science and scientific research is substantive about climate change, mostly being caused by human activity. Mm-hmm. But how, for our listeners' benefit, how do they know and what's the evidence?
Well, there is just a huge amount of evidence, and some of it's very technical, some of it is very simple. My sort of go-to intro to climate change is starting off by holding up a block of graphite that's 2 by 2 by 6 inches, which I'll hold up here for your listeners. but if you just picture a black solid block that is 2 by 2 by 6 inches, I have that as a prop for many of the talks and workshops and sorts and those sorts of things that I do. And I ask the question, how does that 2 by 2 by 6 block of graphite, which is pure carbon, graphite's pure carbon, how does that much carbon compared to the amount of carbon in a gallon of gasoline? And the block of graphite weighs a little over 1.5 pounds. A gallon of gasoline weighs about 6 pounds. And I ask, you know, sort of generally, does that graphite, that carbon, that block of carbon weigh a lot less or about the same or a lot more than the amount of carbon in a gallon of gasoline? And people typically get the question wrong. Usually I make them sweat it out for a while before I to an answer. But they typically get the answer wrong. The correct answer is that's about a third of the amount of carbon in a gallon of gasoline. So if you picture in your mind a 6 by 6 by 2 inch block, which is actually what I meant to order when I filled out the form, that's how much carbon is in a gallon of gas. So a gallon of gasoline mm-hmm. is 87% carbon by weight. So there's 5.5 pounds in a 6 pound gallon of gasoline. Mm-hmm. And we burn 374 million gallons of gas a day in the U.S., which liquid transportation fuels, which is mostly gasoline, overwhelmingly gasoline, account for 25% or so of U.S. emissions. And so when you think about that 374 million gallons, which is more than a gallon per person per day, each one of those containing 5.5 pounds of carbon, and that much carbon is coming out of your tailpipe, of course, in a very different form. It's coming out as carbon dioxide gas. And that carbon dioxide gas, because of the combustion reaction, taking the carbon from the gasoline and combining it with oxygen from the atmosphere, for each gallon of gas that we burn, you get 19 pounds of CO2 put into the atmosphere. And that's, you know, it's not magic. It's chemistry. It's, again, because the carbon in the gasoline combines with oxygen from the atmosphere. And pardon my cough again. That is the smoke in the air here today. And again, you know, multiply that by 374 million to get the total amount of carbon dioxide produced every day just from burning gasoline. Multiply that by about 4 to account for total U.S. emissions. And then going a step further, I talk about, you know, what do we do to get that carbon out of the air when we put it in there? And of course, it's very important to emphasize that it's easier to take care of something rather than to mess it up and then try and fix it. So right. Wherever we can reduce the amount of stuff that we're burning, mm-hmm. We should do that, and that includes, you know, burning less gasoline. But we've been putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere since the dawn of the Industrial Revolution. So we've got some cleanup to do, and the technologically simplest thing to do is to grow plant materials. And if you take it out by growing trees, well, wood is about half carbon by weight, 45 to 50% carbon by weight. To make the math simple, 5.5 pounds is half of 11. So you need to grow 11 pounds of wood for each one of those 374 million gallons of gas that we burn every day. And we're not doing anything remotely similar to that. So we've got to figure out how to step up our game on reforesting, as well as figuring out other methods for dealing with all that carbon we put in the air.
So burning way too much fossil fuel and not preserving our forests, whether they be rainforests or northern forests or the forests that are burning and causing your respiratory. Don, this is great. I love this subject, and I think our listeners do too. And we'd like to learn a lot more. First, we're going to take a very short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio, and we'll be back after these words.
Westchester Medical Center Health Network's new Health Alliance Hospital is open in Kingston at 105 Mary's Avenue. The new hospital delivers on WMC Health's commitment to provide access to advanced healthcare right here in this community. Our comfortable and welcoming new Health Alliance Hospital has highly skilled doctors, nurses, and staff. We are ready to make your healthcare experience the best it can be. Here are just a few of the services ready to take care of you and your loved ones when you need us. A new emergency department with 24/7 triage for behavioral health needs, life-saving advanced cardiology programs, family birth center, private rooms, precise imaging technology, critical care support. And later this year, our inpatient psychiatry program will be reestablished to complement existing emergency and outpatient programs. Go to hahv.org for information. That's hahv.org.
And now, Healthy Ulster continues. This is a weekly presentation of the Ulster County Department of Health on the Hudson Valley's Talk and Sports Network, The Beacon.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Today, we're talking about climate, health, and human activity with Dr. Don Haas, who's a geoscientist and director of teacher programming at the Paleontological Research Institute. See, Don, I almost got it right that time.
Almost. Although it is institution. I like to
so institution.
Yeah.
So, like Don, we were talking about some of the impacts of burning fossil fuels, and we talked about the Museum of the Earth where I first met you. I think we talked a little bit, touched on the concept of scale in your notes, and I think that was talking about the overall usage of fossil fuels, whether in transportation, shipping, creating electricity, producing electricity. Is that pretty much, is that what the concept of scale that you refer to in your notes is all about?
Well, that's a big part of it. And when I have enough time to do a longer workshop, I steal an idea from an old book called Innumeracy by John Allen Paulos. I put a sticky note on one corner of the front wall of the room with zero written on it. And on the other corner of the front wall of the room, I put a trillion, and I give all the people in the room a post-it note and I tell them that's a billion and go put it where you think it goes between zero and a trillion. And they tend to spread the post-it notes out over the first two-thirds of the distance from zero to a trillion. And each one of those named numbers that we hear pretty regularly, 1,000, 1,000,000, 1,000,000,000, and 1,000,000,000,000, each one of those is 1,000 times larger than the one before it. But we don't have an intuitive sense of scale, so we get that wrong. And that, I think, didn't matter for most of human history. Since I was born in 1963, I think everybody ought to be able to understand the difference between 1,000, 1,000,000,000, 1,000,000,000, and 1,000,000,000,000. And there are some strategic ways of thinking about that. One is to talk about seconds, and 1,000 seconds is about 17 minutes. You multiply that 1,000 seconds or 17 minutes by 1,000 again to get you to 1,000,000 seconds. So that's about 12 days. Do it again. So a 1,000 million seconds is a billion seconds, and that's 32 years. And a trillion seconds is about 32,000 years. And I think we need to understand that a lot better than broad slices of the population ever have, because it's so important for understanding not only climate and energy, but issues about population and, you know, the federal budget and things like that. And most people just haven't thought about it enough and weren't, I don't think typically were taught it well enough to really wrap their heads around that. And so they don't really know much of a difference between 374 million, that amount of gasoline that we burn in gallons a day, and a trillion. They're both really big numbers, but they're very big different numbers. And thinking about the impacts of climate change, I think you really need to wrap your head around those issues of scale.
Mm-hmm. So, Don, we know something about the physical health impacts of climate change, some of which you're experiencing today with the wildfires coming down from Canada. We know about extreme weather events caused by climate change. We know about increases in asthma, insect-borne diseases. But there are also mental health concerns around climate, having to do with having to cope with, you know, extreme weather events, losses, property damage, and what have you. And, you know, and our kids are really impacted by it, because it is literally their future. And, you know, Greta Thunberg, who was a 15-year-old in Sweden, who started a global youth movement, lit a fire, pardon the pun, on climate change to really get youth motivated. But it also produces a lot of anxiety, I would imagine, in reading the literature. So putting your teacher's hat on for a second, how can parents help their children understand and cope with climate change issues and help reduce their anxiety around it?
It's a great question and a serious problem that I think a lot of folks are not handling in the best way. They're well-intended, but I think there are folks in the federal government, for example, who think that exposing kids to information about climate change is causing the anxiety. And I think that's a problematic viewpoint. I think that if we are not honest about the impacts of climate change, kids will see through that and adults will see through that. And then that will make them more nervous because you're lying to them. I think honesty is paramount in education. And if you're honest about climate change, you're going to scare people and maybe make them anxious. And that's okay. Feeling emotions is healthy, and leaning into those negative emotions to actually do something about them is really how I think the most important strategy for dealing with climate anxiety and climate depression. And generally, the best way to deal with negative emotions is to get to work on the problems that are triggering those negative emotions, and to ideally do that in community. And that's, I think that's true of any sort of mental health issue. But for climate change, it means, you know, getting together in your community with others who are interested in the problem and begin to work on solutions. And that will fortify your mental health by giving you community and by, you know, making progress on solving the problem. Mm-hmm. And that's Dr. Don's short prescription.
Well, it's interesting because I just read a quote by Greta Thunberg that I really love it. And she said that one thing we need more than hope is action. Once we start to act, hope is everywhere.
Yeah.
Which I think really says it all. It really sums it up, right? Because, and we know this with a number of public health issues. You know, if we just remind people about all the things that could make them sick or that could kill them or what have you, if we don't offer some practical things that people can do in their own lives, even if they're small steps that can eventually lead to bigger change, we've simply succeeded in driving them into despair, right? I mean,
right.
Doing something about it is we're hardwired to do that as a community.
Yeah. And I, the talk that I've given the most over the last couple of years is called Fear is Our Best Hope, Moving from Climate Anxiety to Climate Action. And it talks about how fear is perfectly rational when the world is scary. And fear is a motivator to do things. But of course, you can't just do fear. You've got to work with fear amongst the other emotions and figure out how it connects into change. And the historical example that I give some attention to in that talk is the movie The Day After, which was the most watched made-for-television movie that aired in the fall of 1983 and scared the hell out of Reagan. And it's about nuclear war. It is probably not the only thing that made Reagan change his mind about amassing nuclear weapons, but the Reagan reversal happened in the fall of 83 after he saw that movie and then went on with Gorbachev to sign the first nuclear weapons reduction treaty. So, and fear had a lot to do with that change. And I think people aren't scared enough right now of climate change, but you can be scared and still be mentally healthy.
Get
to work on the problems.
So Don, with respect to climate education in our schools, what is the status quo with respect to that climate change education, both in New York State and around the country? How is that changing and what more could we be doing?
Great question. The status quo is changing, and it's changing both in New York and around the world and around the country. In New York, I'm part of a group called the Climate and Resilience Education Task Force, which is working on improving climate change education policy in New York State. And we had a bill and an appropriation that unfortunately did not make it into the recently approved state budget for supporting climate change education. But in spite of that not passing, there are good things happening. I think it's very, very interesting that the Regents exam, the high school exam that had in the last few administrations had the most climate change content on it was the English Language Arts exam, which had four of the six last administrations of that exam had substantial readings that addressed climate change. One was on solar geoengineering, another one was on veganism, and it's the argument essay, and you've got to read these different passages and come up with an argument about what the question poses. And it's in one way, it's a little disappointing that the English exam is where that's showing up, but it's also in the process of changing. There are new exams debuting this month in biology and earth science that will have more climate change education content based on the national standards, the next generation science standards. And next year, the new physics and chemistry exams will roll out, and the state has released sample items from there that have substantial climate change content. So things are improving, but there's a long way to go. It should be taught across the curriculum, and we're not doing that.
Absolutely. Don, this is such a fascinating topic, and you're such a wealth of information, and we definitely want to have you as a return guest. But since we are rapidly running out of time, tell folks where they can go to learn more about climate change, the Museum of the Earth, and how to reach you.
Yeah, the museumoftheearth.org is one place to start. It's one of our websites. Our Earth at Home website, which is earthathome.org, where you spell out the word at, and it's all one word, and click on the climate tab there, and you'll find our Center for Climate Change Education with a teacher-friendly guide to climate change and a large collection of videos on climate change and some activities to teach yourself and just some readings to do there, and links to our YouTube channel. And I will also make a plug for somebody else. The Project Drawdown has done a reviewed list of actions you can take by their impact. So you can sort it in various ways. And that's at drawdown.org. And if you want to support our efforts to improve climate change education policy in New York State, go to cretf.org for the Climate and Resilience Education Task Force.
Wonderful. Don, thank you so much for a lifetime of work. on this subject and education. It's wonderful. The museum is wonderful. I urge our listeners to go to the Ithaca Museum of the Earth. It's really in Ithaca. And really wonderful. Thank you. It's great having met you and talking with you, and we'll have you back.
Yeah, great to meet you too, and great to be on the show. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show from the Ulster County Department of Health. This program is a weekly community affairs presentation sponsored by the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next weekend.